Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. On Parking Lot Payday, concertgoers can win a cool load of cash without having to step into the concert venue. AXS TV has this series, and we have host Zach Zelwin joining me next. A TV miniseries is drawing attention at recent TV and film festivals, as well as plenty of awards. It's How to Hack Birth Control, and you'll hear star Lauren Harris and writer-director Sassy Moen next half hour. Lifetime's popular Flowers in the Attic franchise is living and living large again through prequel miniseries The Origin. Our final 30 minutes welcomes in executive producer Paul Scaroda. Also ahead, California-based television series land a tax credit advantage, our classic trivia question, and a Spanish language sports breakthrough. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. I present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Verbal, Reason, Acast, and Apple Podcasts. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks, all the good stuff, whenever and wherever you want. And get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Welcome to you and you and especially you out there. We welcome you on this Monday afternoon to the program all about TV's current and future. We are 2 weeks away from marking our 15th anniversary. 76 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. We are expecting a line of showers and thundershowers to hit us within the next 2 hours. So if you're in the area, get the umbrellas out. You may need them very, very soon. And we have a great lineup of guests coming away over the next hour and a half, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone, dial in, and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio. We've got the chat room up and running for you, so go ahead and use it. It's SimonApple04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. While the program is on the air, as always, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn Stream. Follow the instructions. Let's be live with you. Zach Zelwin from Parking Lot Payday on AXS TV will join us live after these news notes. California is set to distribute nearly $91 million in tax credits among a group of television series. The state's film office will forward credits to upcoming Disney Plus Star Wars saga Skeleton Crew, The Residents from Shondaland via Netflix, and a number of new HBO and HBO Max series, including Presumed Innocent, based on the famous movie, and My Glory. Skeleton Crew will get the largest slice of this tax credit pie, $20.9 million. Abbott Elementary and Ozark topped the parade of TV winners for the annual African American Film Critics Association Awards. Abbott picked up Best Comedy Series, with Keita Brunson, the creator and star, named Breakout Star. Ozark earned Best Drama Series, and other series taking honors include A Black Lady Sketch Show, 61st Street, Power Book 3, Raising Kanan, Swagger, and Bel Air. The association will get out these awards August 28th in Los Angeles. Now, quickies. Casey Bloys will stay on as chief content officer of HBO and HBO Max through 2027 under a contract extension accepted by parent Warner Bros. Discovery. Not a Real production company is the new TV-making shingle from Bleeps Creek creator and producer Dan Levy, who was on this program way back when that series was getting off the ground. Initial projects include upcoming HBO Max foodie contest, The Big Brunch, with Levy as both host and judge. Season 3 of Emmy-nominated Tune Central Park starts September 9th on Apple TV+. True crime documentary miniseries I Just Killed My Dad unfolds on Netflix August 9th. And breaking news, two of Cartoon Network's most acclaimed and most award-winning series, The Powerpuff Girls and Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends, will make a comeback, in the case of The Powerpuff Girls, second comeback with new episodes. Creator Craig McCracken has agreed to executive produce both revivals. And that is news notes for today. As long as television's been around, the musical game show has been around. Think of all the tunes or all the years that have been happening, like Name That Tune, Stop the Music, Music Bingo, Win for the Stars, Yours for a Song, What's That Song, and more recently shows like Don't Forget the Lyrics and Beat Shazam, both on Fox. Well, we have another musical game show, very offbeat one to tell you about today. It premiered last Tuesday on Mark Cuban's network AXS TV. It's called Parking Lot Payday. Think of it this way. If you want to go to a great concert with stars like Metallica or the Rolling Stones or Imagine Dragons doing their thing, if you know your music trivia about any of those artists or others, and you're in the parking lot when these folks come to call, you can win up to $2,500. Joining us live to talk about the program is the host of the series. You may know him from his appearances on ESPN's Around the Horn or Attack of the Show on G4 and other places. It's a pleasure to welcome Zach Selwyn. Zach, hello there.
Hello there. How are you?
Very fine, thank you. Zach, where are you calling us calling from today?
Calling you from? I'm actually in the woods at a songwriting retreat in Nashville.
Oh, Music City, USA. If you're going to be at a retreat, that's the place to go.
Yeah, indeed.
So tell us about this new series. It's a very unusual one because it takes place outdoors, and it sort of is like a new dimension of musical shows.
Yeah, so Parking Lot Payday is basically a pregame parking lot trivia show that takes place before the rock concert you're about to go see, and we're interviewing super fans and offering them cash to answer trivia questions about the bands that they're going to go check out. And, you know, you can win up to $2,560 if you know your knowledge. And we've been to a bunch of different stadiums thus far. We got our second episode premiering tomorrow night at 8 p.m. on Access TV, and I'm really excited about it.
This, I believe, is the first attempt at a game show from Mark Cuban's network. How did it come about?
Yeah, they were trying to do sort of like a Billy on the Street meets Cash Cab kind of idea. And, you know, they looked at sort of like past movie examples like Heavy Metal Parking Lot, which is that great cult classic heavy metal documentary from the 80s. And they decided, let's combine it all. And basically, I was lucky enough to be chosen as the host by the producers. And, we weren't sure if it was going to work. But the minute we got out in the parking lot and started quizzing people on the bands, it was amazing how fun it was and how many people really do know their knowledge and how many people just think they know stuff and don't know anything.
Before doing this, had you auditioned to become a game show host?
My friend, I have hosted every single type of television show that has ever been made. I've been on game shows, I've been on reality shows, sports shows, music shows, tech shows, gaming shows, you know. So I think, you know, I've done a bunch of game shows in the past that had not made it onto TV, a lot of pilots for CMT, stuff like that. But, you know, yes, to answer your question, yes. I've even hosted, at one point I hosted a competitive taxidermy show on AMC that did not last more than one season. But, yeah, I guess I had some past experience.
So in your journey in the role of game show host, and we'll get back to how this game show works in a second, but what have you learned along the way in terms of becoming a host? Did you ever get tips from some of the top hosts around? Other places, whether it's Pat Sajak or Billy Dallas Trebek or Steve Harvey or other folks like that?
That's an interesting question. My biggest mentors, I think, were originally I originally got my break on ESPN and the host of Around the Horn, Pardon the Interruption, Tony Kornheiser and Michael Wilbon and Tony Reale from Around the Horn and Stuart Scott from ESPN, rest in peace. Those guys were really, really encouraging, and they made me believe in what I could do. And, you know, it wasn't necessarily a game show host exactly who, like, told me I could do that. But these guys were the ones who certainly said, look, you have the ability. You just got to focus and work on this and, you know, put in the work, and your career can happen. So I want to thank those guys, you know, for the rest of my life for sure.
And people should remember that in addition to being a great anchor person on SportsCenter, Scott was also a terrific game show host. He did two of them, at least, for ESPN.
That's
one was
right.
Game Job,
yeah, well,
which was the reality right. Slash game show where you had the opportunity to become a reporter.
That's the show I was on. I was on that show. I was the runner-up for a Dream Job the first season.
What was it like doing that show? I saw the first season of Dream Job, and it was absolutely – I thought it was beautifully done in terms of really giving you the inside
Thanks.
Look at what does it take to be a sports reporter or to be a sports anchor or to do a sports center or a panel show.
Yes, so that was a big break for me. I was, you know, living in Los Angeles, acting, writing, making music, just trying to find any way into the working world of entertainment. And I auditioned for that as sort of a joke. I had really, really long hair. I wore like a 70s cowboy suit on the show, you know, and I didn't expect it to change my life, but it did. And the minute I got on, my whole, it, you know, just, I don't know, my people were aware of what I did. And Stuart Scott was definitely there encouraging me along the way to follow my dreams and not look back. And yeah, it was an incredible experience, a life-changing experience, you know, and that was almost 20, I mean, that's 18 years ago at this point, which is crazy. But yeah, it was a great, great time of my life.
And the other show he did was Stump the Schwab with Howie Schwab, the all-brainy trivia expert on everything sports, which ran several seasons. Yeah. And it took a lot for people to beat that man. Mr. Schwab knew what he was talking about. He really was, when you talk about brainiacs, that man was a brainiac.
Yeah, wow, wasn't that a great show? I mean, I guess you're right. I didn't even think of Stuart Scott having been a game show host, but yeah, absolutely. That guy could host anything.
Yeah. He was a good one. And we're speaking with Zach Selwyn. He is the host of the brand new series on ASX Games on ASX TV. It's their first game show ever. It's called Parking Lot Payday. And episode number 2 is on tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific time on that channel, available on cable and satellite. Zach joins us live from Music City, USA, Nashville, Tennessee, this half hour. On tomorrow, we'll be televised. Some of it with you live from New York. Good to have you with us. A question or comment for Zach? Ring that phone, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we will have one of the people who last week got a Primetime Emmy Award nomination for her work on the Issa Rae HBO series Insecure. She is considered one of the top film editors in the world of episodic TV series. Her name is Nena Erib, and she's already won 2 Emmy Awards, one for Project Greenlight on HBO, and another for another episode several years ago of Insecure, and she's back going for number 3. Will she make it? We'll get her thoughts about it. Nena Erib, that's Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. So first of all, when it came to putting this Parking Lot Payday show together, how did you find, A, the parking lots where you set up shop, and then secondly, how did you find the contestants?
Yeah, well, the parking lots and the stadiums are a little more tricky. There's a lot of red tape you got to go through. It's not like we can just show up with a camera and start shooting. You know, the band needs to approve it, the venue, the promoter, all that stuff. We got to be wary, you know, of logos and things like that. So, you know, we go through a lot of vetting and a lot of potential ideas, and then we kind of whittle it down to see who's going to be the final folks who let us come in. So that's that. And then the contestants are basically, we're there set up with the cameras and we're just flagging people down saying, hey, do you want to win some money? Talking about Metallica, talking about the Rolling Stones. And people either stop and go, oh my God, I can't wait to play, or they get completely frightened and like run away from us as if we're threatening them with like a sharp stick. It's amazing how hard it is.
And in terms of the questions, and Zach, in terms of the questions, do the venues or the performers, do they assist in any way in terms of giving you trivia about their songs, about their work, or do you have to do a lot of research away from
the venues, I guess,
before you come in?
Yeah, that's a good question. The bands themselves just have to approve the questions because, you know, I mean, everyone's very aware of their brand and how sensitive things can be. So, you know, if we're doing a Coldplay show and we write up like a dumb question about Gwyneth Paltrow or something, that's going to get, you know, squashed. So, you know, we do have to make sure we're minding their interests and how they want to be, you know, talked about on television. So yeah, we're very thorough in checking everything and making sure that it's approved.
And are the questions sort of start out easy and they get harder as they go along?
Yeah. We start out with like a $5 easy question. Like, you know, who's the lead singer of the Rolling Stones? And if at that point you don't know Mick Jagger, one, you shouldn't be playing the game show. Two, you shouldn't be at the concert. and so then by, you know, that's a $5 question. Then the contestant can turn that in and try to win $10. And then if they win that, they can try for $20 and then $40. So it always doubles. But at any point you can walk away or you can gamble it and lose it. So if you go for $160, you'll lose your $80 if you get it wrong.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's also some aspects of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire in this, because at any point, if they don't know the answer, they have a couple of lifelines, if you will.
Right. You get one lifeline per contestant per 10 questions. So you have 3 options. I can offer a hint, or they can text a friend and get a response back in a minute, or they can scroll on the smartphones and we time it for 10 seconds. So those are the 3 options. Once you use one of those, though, you don't have any more safety net, you know, hints or anything like that. So, yeah, that's definitely a millionaire trick.
Mm-hmm. as we go forward, was one option used more than the other or others?
It seemed like it's the friends. I've seen it all, but the scrolling of the phone you'd think would be the fastest thing. But, you know, look, I mean, some guys are messing around with 3G out there. You know, 10 seconds goes pretty quick when you're trying to type in, you know, who was Keith Richards' guitar tech on the, you know, Exile Main Street recording or whatever. I mean, I don't know. It all kind of comes together. I think most people try to do the phone, though, and or take the hint from me. Those are the two I've seen more than anything. Most people don't rely on their friends, I guess, to text them back.
Mm-hmm. Now, because this is sort of a guerrilla-type game, as you are doing this game show on the fly, because you've got, let's say, tomorrow night it's the Rolling Stones concert, and the Rolling Stones are only playing that night in that venue. You got one shot in that parking lot. So how soon do you set up as you get permission, and how much time do you have to tape the episode before the concert happens?
We get permission, and we sort of know a few months ahead that we're going to be going to a venue on a certain date. And then we get there pretty early to start shooting. We start off, you know, I'm normally starting off at, like, if a show's at 8 o'clock, at 1 o'clock I'm there, and I'm doing the wraparounds, the intros, the host reads, all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, once people start filtering into the parking lot, we start grabbing contestants to try to get them to play. So we're there pretty much all day. So, I mean, you got to think, we're shooting 6-7 hours of footage. If we're only editing a 22-minute show, there is a lot of work being done. And there's a lot of stuff that gets left on the cutting room floor.
So how is it determined? So how do you determine, you know, which contestants actually get on? If you have so much tape, hours of play, let's say, to choose from.
Yeah. You know, I mean, look, it's television, man. You know, you got to edit together your best ones. You got to make it look as good, as funny, as quick, as diverse, as everything as possible. So, you know, we might have some stuff that was really good, but it just gets on the cutting room floor because maybe the person only got the $10 question and then lost. And, you know, it's more exciting to have the dramatic guy who got all the way to $640, you know. So it's definitely a good question, and, you know, I think that's just part of any game show on the fly like that, or any game show in general. I mean, you want to put out your best product, so we look for the better. You know, bigger personalities always help. People who are dressed like they're ready to rock, people who are, you know, screaming along with us and having a fun time, those guys are going to make the show a lot more than someone who's just sort of a droll, you know, placeholder. So as you can imagine.
Yeah. You know, a week and a half ago, we had one of the executive producers of the $100,000 Pyramid on ABC, Constance Schwartz Marino, who works with Michael Strahan in his production, their production company. And the thing is that when what you see on the screen, including last night, is 2 half-hour episodes, and they're taped at different times. There is each half hour is taped at a different date. So it's a question of, as she was mentioning it, how having to put the pieces together. Like, what episodes do you do? Because the episode, one episode, could you have an episode, a half hour that's taped right off the bat, let's say in May, and then another one that's taped closer to air date. So it's a very, like your show, a very interesting science in terms of how you jigsaw puzzle each one.
Yeah, and I mean, look, we didn't shoot. Metallica was the premiere episode last week, but we didn't shoot that one first. It was just the best fans, the best energy, you know, the best parking lot by far. So, you know, you gotta lead with your strongest stuff.
We're talking about the new AXX, or Access Game Show, Parking Lot Payday, and the next episode, which deals with the Rolling Stones, is on tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, on that channel available on cable and satellite. We're talking with Zach Selwyn. He's the host of the program, and he's with us live from Music City, USA, Nashville, Tennessee, this half hour, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Happy to have you with us on this Monday afternoon of July 2022. I'm now with you live from New York, where it is 76 degrees at the very moment. If you have a question or comment on remaining minutes with Zach, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Next Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, among our guests, we'll have the developer of a new Apple TV Plus series that premieres this Friday called Best Foot Forward. It's based on the actual story of someone who was able to get through the world of learning and do it with a prosthetic leg. It's a very interesting show, and a lot of people are talking about it. And we will have the developer of the show, Matt Fleckenstein, will be with us. That's next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And 2 weeks from tonight, remember, we'll be marking our 15th anniversary with a special two-hour edition, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern, 12 to 2 Pacific. And we will have a special guest each hour. On the first hour, we got a big exclusive. The Executive Vice President and Head of Programming for Lifetime Television, Amy Winter, who rarely gives interviews of any kind, radio, television, print, etc. And on the second hour, we will have the General Manager of the fast-growing mega-content service topic, Ryan Chinatry. That's 2 weeks from today. Again, 3 to 5 Eastern, noon to 2 Pacific, right here on Tamavi Televised. And Zach, we have a call. We're going to take it. Hello, you're on Tamavi Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from? All right, go ahead. You're on the air. Let's try it again. Hang on. Stand by. We do have a call. And I believe
hey,
here
Simon.
We go. Okay. Go right ahead.
It's Rick Webb calling from Philadelphia.
Rick, good to hear you. You're on with Zach Selwyn. Go right ahead.
Hey, Zach. I just wanted to ask kind of an off-color question. Like, do you guys end up filming people if they're like obviously like they're on mushrooms or something like that? And you're like, oh my god, this guy's hilarious, but he's obviously like concert up a bit. So like, do you guys?
I mean, we're not actively seeking people who are inebriated. Look, especially when you watch that Metallica episode, there's certainly some people who have had a few, especially because we were in Las Vegas, and I mean. It definitely makes for better television when someone's had a little loose, but I'm assuming if we ever do like Dead and Company or Fish, we'll see more of those guys.
Very cool. Well, I'm definitely going to check out the show because it sounds awesome. So,
thanks so much.
Best wishes on that, and best wishes at your songwriting workshop.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Hey, Simon, I have a quick question for you.
Sure, go ahead.
If somebody's in Park Slope tomorrow, where should they get pizza?
Say that again one more time.
I might be in Park Slope tomorrow, and I'm wondering who has the best pizza.
Smiler's, on the corner of 7th Avenue and 9th Street. They got great pizza. They also have a wonderful chicken roll and also a baby grand a baby pizza too, which is like $7.
Awesome. Awesome.
I highly recommend the mushroom and the chicken slices.
Cool. All right. Well, I'll definitely check it out. So thank you. And thanks for
putting
me on.
All right. You're welcome,
Simon.
Rick. Thanks for the call and enjoy your time up in the slope.
Thank you. Take care.
Rick Webb, our great friend from Philadelphia here on Tamavi Televised. Zach, by the way, do you when you have these games, do you draw a crowd? Does the crowd get really into it?
Surrounding, you can hear people cheering you on. If you get something right, you hear someone screaming in the back. Yeah, it becomes an event. And I think as the show's getting further along, we're going to start seeing people who recognize us now when they go to shows and want to challenge us. Because I get a lot of – I've been getting hit up by everybody saying, those people were idiots. I would have known all 10 questions. Those guys are dumb. I want my money. I'm coming for you. Parking lot payday. So, we're out here. We're out here accepting all comers, So there's some excitement around it.
I want to go back to Around the Horn, which, by the way, is on today at 5 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time on ESPN and still hosted by Tony Reality. What was it like working with Tony and being part of that show? It seems that it's still doing super.
I mean, what a crazy experience. I got a call, after Dream Job. They said, look, we want to try you on Around the Horn when Tony Reality is out of town, and I was very nervous. But I went out to Washington, D.C., and Tony Kornheiser and Wilbon and Tony Reale all sort of welcomed me. And they were like, look, this is hard. We're not going to lie to you. You have to be quick. You got to be sharp. You got to be good with the buzzers. You have to know everything. I was still a little naive, I think. I was trying to make it funnier than it should have been. And I think on my own, it was just a very, very hard program to do and learn in 1 week. It's like kind of learning how to fly a jet in like – under a week. It was it's the science. Tony Reale was me in the first through, and then audition and let me the keys. And I can't thank them enough for the opportunity. I wasn't expecting to take over the show. It was just more of a substitute gig, but it was it was an interesting, crazy experience because they shoot that show in Washington, D.C. And I quickly realized that, all those on the show are so they're on that Schwab level. I mean, those guys know everything. And, it was an amazing time, very challenging and very cool.
And meantime, part of the interruption, which still follows around the horn, it's doing as good as ever with Tony Kornheiser and Mike Wilbon. They still have the format. They have great chemistry. I do wish they would cut the I wish that ESPN would put less commercials on because I think the show has gone a little – personal thought. I think the show's gone a little downhill because they don't have more time to – they have to have less time now to do do what they wanted to do. Some of the segments have been cut. It's now three segments rather than four. And the show is as good as ever. The show itself is as good as ever.
Yeah, I was Tony had me come on and read viewer mail one time, and I don't think I ever got more love from the world that day. It was pretty cool. That was a great show. Still is. Yeah, I know what you're saying though.
Mm-hmm. So while you wait to find out if Parking Lot Payday gets the second round of episodes, what are you up to now? As you wait to alert that news.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned I was here writing songs. I work for this company called Audio Up. We make sort of scripted podcast musicals, and we have a big music department, and I'm one of the in-house songwriters. So I'm sort of working on that stuff, writing and some upcoming scripted podcast stuff, which is coming through SiriusXM and other places as well. But the next one coming up is called The Ballad of Uncle Drank. It stars Gary Busey as a completely drunk beach country singer. And it's just full of funny songs and ridiculous moments. And I'm really excited about that because if you know Gary Busey at all, it's going to be a train wreck, and it's going to be a brilliant train wreck and one you can't stop listening to. So I'm really excited about that project.
And just think, way back when he did the Buddy Holly story, and a lot of people thought
he
should have got an Oscar nomination for that incredible movie.
I think he did. I think he was nominated.
Yeah.
I think he was.
And still, it's an amazing movie. Again, the program is Parking Lot Payday. It's the new and first game show from ASX TV or Access Television, Mark Cuban's network. And you can catch the next episode, which deals with the Rolling Stones, tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, on that channel. Check your local links for where it's available on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, you go to www.axstv. Parking Lot Payday. Tomorrow night and every Tuesday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Zach Selwyn, thank you so much for taking time out from Music Scene USA to be with us. Congratulations on the new show. Hopefully, beginning of a great long run. And let's have you back soon. It's been a great pleasure.
I would love to. Thank you so very much for having me.
You're very welcome, Zach. Take care and enjoy the week.
You too, man. Take it easy.
Zach Selwyn joining us live from Music City, USA, from the Access TV series Parking Lot Payday. Again, tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. More tomorrow we televised coming away with first some words from our fine sponsor at Audible.com. Are you someone that believes you have it all? Well, the heroine of a new audiobook called It Ends With Us certainly thinks so. Great new business, great life, and then there's a relationship. And does the person still have it all? Well, Colleen Hoover details in her wonderful new audiobook, It Ends With Us. It's a book you can get right now with a trial run at Audible.com. Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital entertainment, information, and inspiration. There's over 250,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever your ear is on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker Tune Radio, and all of our podcast affiliates. Just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audiobook, the one-month trial, great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com, and while supply lasts, very important and vital health and wellness information. Remember, if you're an Amazon Prime member, you get two audiobooks for your trial of one, one of them from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. That's original audio series and podcast productions, best of Broadway or Broadway regional theater, great woman shows, and much, much more. And if you do decide to become a member of Audible.com and you're a Prime customer, you get your first 3 months absolutely free. For all details, go to audibletrial.com/televised. Makes a great gift for you or someone you love. When we come back, you'll find out about the TV miniseries that is becoming a hit at many a TV and film festival of late. It's called How to Have Birth Control. We will have the star, Lauren Harris, and the Jacqueline of all trades, producer, writer, director, Sassy Moen, So both join us live from Los Angeles. Actually pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogsofradio.com, Springer.com, Tune.com. Together reaching over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, BTR brings you Women Who Jam Radio. It's highly entertaining, highly addictive, too. Women Who Jam Radio, check it out tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget, best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to more of Tomorrow Be Televised on this July 18th afternoon, 2022. Simon Abbott with you live from New Weber, York. Happy to have you with us. More great guests coming the hour ahead. And if you have a question or comment for them, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04, by name. Well, a lot of times in this program, we talk about TV series pilots that make the round of TV festivals and film festivals of late that do well. Well, we're going to get into a mini-series that has become the darling of a lot of film festivals, so much so that over the last year, including recently, this particular miniseries called How to Hack Birth Control has won a bunch of awards, and they're not done yet, as you will hear. Joining us live from Los Angeles, California, is the star of How to Hack Birth Control, Lauren Harris, and the jackal of all trades, you might say, the producer, writer, and director, Sassy Moen. Lauren and Sassy, welcome along with us.
Hello.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
It is a pleasure. And Sassy, I got to ask you. Very few people are named Sassy, or if Sassy's the first name, is this one that your parents gave you to sort of separate you from other human beings?
From other Sassys? No, actually, I gave it to myself when I was three. So it kind of stuck around from there.
Oh, how did that happen? Oh, you let yourself in. We got to know the story here.
I mean, honestly, it's my birth certificate name is Sarah Moen, and I just started calling myself Sassy Momo. And I think that some of my relatives started, like, you know, like teasingly calling me Sassy. And then eventually, I don't know, over the many years, I got to a point where I was just like, yeah, my name's Sassy.
All right. Well, Lauren, let's get to you. Tell us about how you got yourself involved in what has turned out to be quite a showcase miniseries.
So, you know, I just submitted to How to Hack Birth Control like anybody else. Sassy will tell you she received over 5,000 submissions to be part of the cast of How to Hack Birth Control. I was one of the lucky chosen ones, and I count my lucky stars for that every day. I will say that when I first saw the casting notice, I was really intrigued by what they were trying to do with the project. As an actor, you know, you don't often see auditions that request improv from you through the audition experience. So that was something that got me really excited about it. I was cast, and then Sassy and I really hit it off, as we're both female filmmakers who really want to have some sort of social impact through the projects that we're creating, and the rest is history.
Well, that leads to you, Sassy. Give us the history of this miniseries. How did you decide to put this together, and then how did it get the ear of film and TV festivals?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thanks. I came up with it in 2019. I direct a lot of social media commercials, and I sort of had this light bulb moment of thinking, what if I used all the techniques that I use, you know, to sell beer and crackers and beauty products to unsuspecting Instagrammers, that I actually use it for, like Lauren was saying, a social impact project. And so I just came up with How to Hack Birth Control, since a lot of the commercials I do are like hacks. And I thought it would be really funny and also pretty clever to educate people with like a tongue-in-cheek Samantha Bee type of, you know, attitude, but without beating people over the head with it. And it just seems to be resonating super well with festivals. And, you know, like people are very, like I was just in four festivals over the weekend. We were in New York and then Austin, Texas, and one here in LA. And it's really cool to just hear like stories, you know, afterwards people come up to me and, you know, say that they learned something or that they had this experience. And that's just something that's very important to me with the films that I make, you know?
Mm-hmm. If you have a question or comment for both of our guests this half hour, that's Lauren Harris and Sassy Moen, give us a call, 646-652-2906. For those of you just joining at the bottom of the hour, that's the number you use to get involved and interactive with our guests. And that number is good anywhere you're catching us, across the country, around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. Or if you're shy about the phone, use the chat room. It's SimonApple04 by name. And you'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/television. Coming up before the top of the hour, classic trivia question. Get your thinking caps on. Three prizes could be yours if you're first with the correct answer. You know, back in the classic days of movies, movie shorts, in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, there were two people who became very well known for their how-to comedy shorts. One was the great humorist Robert Benchley, who did shorts like How to Sleep, How to Eat, How to Do This, How to Do That. And then there was the great Pete Smith, who had the very funny voice that went like this. We're going to find out how we do this and how is that, what you do when you sleep on a hammock, and so on and so forth. I'm curious if you ever saw those shorts and whether they, if you did, whether they were inspirations for How to Hack Birth Control.
I can't say that I've seen those. However, one of my biggest influences is the Marx Brothers, which I would guess would be, based on your description of these, similar tongue-in-cheek type of style where you take something completely obvious but maybe that, like, people get bent out of shape over and then make fun of the fact that people get bent out of shape over something incredibly obvious and not worth it, you know? And so that type of, like you're saying, how to sleep. Like, we all know how to sleep, right? I'd assume so. But it's, like, hilarious to think of a short film making fun of, like, this is how you sleep. Like, I'm sure that housewives at the time were like, this is how you please your husband, you know, like that type of stuff.
And that's exactly how Pete Smith did it. Also, there was another great comedy series called Joe McDopes with the great George Jetson's voice himself, George O'Hanlon, playing Joe. And it was like, so you want to be this, so you want to be that, so you want to, et cetera, et cetera. And, of course, it was like how you deal with a situation in a very, very funny manner. Lauren, when you got the assignment to do How to Hack Birth Control, did Sassy suggest ways to play your character, like be the average person who is, like, jumping into the situation, you're trying to figure out how you hack?
So we did have a number of rehearsals, and it was kind of weird because we were filming this during the height of the pandemic. So, you know, we were getting lots of COVID tests before coming into rehearsal, wear masks. You had to fill out, like, a COVID safety form before showing up at rehearsal. But my character is sort of what I like to consider repressed by both her family and society to really understand her sexuality and her rights through her sexuality. And it really isn't until the end of the film and the education that's provided to both the audience but also the characters throughout the film, you know, what your options really are to how to hack your birth control. So I like to feel like she's sort of liberated by the end of the film. And Sassy, I would say, gave me a lot of freedom in kind of finding that character's journey. And I was lucky because through being able to be a bystander in the journeys that all of the other characters are going through, it allowed my character to see that and allow her to have her own journey of liberation through the film. So I would say Sassy did a great job of being a kind of guiding eye, but also allowing me to take in the information that was being presented throughout the film and use it to inform my character's journey.
Did you get any freedom to go to other people who have had an experience with birth control and to try to find the humor in what they went through and then apply it to your character?
Yeah, I definitely had that freedom. But the funny thing is, like, being a young woman growing up in today's, you know, generation, I was learning so much from the film as well. And seeing the final cut of the film, there were options to birth control that I didn't even know about. So I feel like there was, when we were on set, it was like this moment of everybody saying, you know, I've had a moment like this, or I didn't know that this existed, or I wish I had known this existed when I was going through this experience. So I feel like because it was so many young women on set, we were all able to see so much of ourselves within the characters that I really didn't have to go too far to find people who had been in that type of experience, because just through the societal culture that we're living in, we all related so much to the issues that were being presented in the film.
Yeah, and just something quickly to add to that is that a couple of the female crew members came up to me through the entire process of it, all telling me that they had gone on a new form of birth control because they had no idea that, which was like so cool to me, even before the film was finished, that it was making like an impact like that. And I also feel like, you know, like Lauren was saying, is as a woman, you know, I feel like I could turn like 3 inches and find like 5 friends of mine to tell me different stories about stuff that I didn't know about. Like one of my friends went through the saga of getting her tubes tied with her husband who was in the Navy, and the Navy wouldn't let her do it because of the, you know, they run the health insurance. They wouldn't let her do it for 5 years. and it was a huge battle. And I had no idea that, you know, men can get vasectomies, you know, for breakfast, and women need to get their husband to sign up on it. And you can only get it if you've had children and are over the age of 25, which to me is pretty ridiculous. But that's something I never would have known had she not told me that she was going through this experience, because why would I personally look for that? It's just not something that I would do. So it's just really cool to listen to other women and put together this collective knowledge of how to hack your birth control, you know?
And for people, Sassy, who have not seen your miniseries, is basically each episode dealing with something that Lauren's character deals with, or do you mix it up where you have other characters as well deal with different situations?
Yeah, for sure. So each episode, it's a part of the How to Hack series, and it's about women's health and women's reproductive rights. So we have how to hack menopause, how to hack forced birth, how to hack you're pregnant, what's next, you know, like really funny episodes like that, but also informing people with the changing times of reproductive rights today. And the way, while we haven't shot the follow-up episodes yet, the way I kind of envision it is like an American Horror Story type of thing, where the same actors with some new additions every now and then play different roles. However, if while, say, we get to you're pregnant, what's next? One of the characters we've already met from a previous episode has a storyline that logically leads to show up in that, I will 100% put them in a heartbeat.
So it sounds like you want to do a repertory company approach, the way Ryan Murphy does his A Girl Story and Crime Story and so forth.
100%. I love that style because it's like you get to work with so many great actors and really get to know their strengths, and then give actors the opportunity to experiment in roles because they feel comfortable in working with you, you know?
In a moment, we're going to talk about the kind of fortune that this miniseries has had on the film and TV festival trail. And I think you'd be very, very surprised. The miniseries we're talking about is How to Hack Birth Control. It was recently screened last month at Gina Davis's Bentonville Film Festival in Arkansas. And next month, it'll be at least one film festival or TV festival here in the Big Apple. We're talking with the star of the series, Lauren Harris, and the producer, writer, director of the series, Sassy Moen. They're both live with us from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. And we are delighted you are along with them and us. Simon Abbott with you live from the Big Apple, 76 degrees at the bottom of the hour. If you have a question or comment for our guest, don't be shy. Make that phone go for you, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Again, Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we will have Emmy Award-winning film editor Nena Erb will be with us. She's going for her third Emmy Award. She's already won two, one for HBO's Project Greenlight, one for an episode of Insecure, the Issa Rae series, and another Issa Rae episode is where she was just nominated for her third possible Primetime Emmy Award. Nena Erb, Primetime Emmy Award winner and nominee for 2022. She's with us live on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. So, Sassy, what was the first film or TV festival that you entered this miniseries in, and what was the initial reaction?
Well, firstly, I have to say, you just sold me to tuning in on Friday because that sounds like an amazing interview to listen to. So I started submitting to these back in October. I've submitted to over 100, and I think that we've heard back from maybe about half so far. So for those listeners who don't know, the film festival process changes per festival, and sometimes you don't find out until as late as 2 weeks before the festival itself that you got in. Sometimes you find out 5 months in advance. So like Bentonville Film Festival, like you were just talking about, which was an amazing experience that happened, I believe it was about 3.5 weeks ago. I had found out about that in March, but then they had told us that we couldn't announce publicly until the beginning of June. So, you know, there's so many different, but I think that the first festival that we had our online premiere was the Cinequest Festival. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, but that was extremely fun. And then the actual in-person premiere was at the Chinese Theater in the Hollywood Comedy Shorts Festival. And since then, I hate to say it, I've kind of lost track of how many other places it just played. But like yesterday, it was at the Austin Comedy Film Festival. I was there in Austin. It was hot as all hell, but we won Best Picture, which was amazing. And then it was in the Long Island Film Expo. And as a native New Yorker myself, I don't need any excuse to go to New York. I will be there in a heartbeat, you know. And then it was at the Offshore Art and Film Festival in Montauk, which was such a blast. There were so many brilliant artists there. And it was also here at the California Women's Film Festival on Saturday that my fiance and co-producer Ben Dearly went to, and some of the actors went as well. And so it's just been so fun to just go around the country and travel with this. And, you know, it's in, like you said, it's in two film festivals in New York on the 6th and 7th. It'll be playing in Queens at the Cinema Festival of NYC at the Forest Hills Regal. And then on the 7th, it'll be playing at the chain NYC Film Festival in Midtown, which I'll be at both of those.
Mm-hmm. What's really amazing to both of you is that, you know, here is a mini-series pilot or mini-series, and you're not only, you know, going up against other TV series pilots. More and more of these festivals, these film festivals, are running TV pilots. And mm-hmm. so you're going up against other, you know, TV series hopefuls, and you're also going up against films, and you are having this tremendous mm-hmm. success. It's like no matter where you're going, you're getting either a best TV series honor or a best miniseries honor, or even, as you said, a best film honor, which, you know, is like, you know, numero uno of the entire festival.
Yeah, it's been really cool, like, you know, and actually a lot of festivals, I've been on some panels and we've had discussions about what you're just saying about how TV pilots have now entered this realm of acceptance. You know, definitely even 10 years ago, there weren't, like, web series, like, applications were just beginning to be accepted as, like, okay, I guess a web series is legit when it's, like, 100% legit. It's a film. It's just on the web. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you know, it's been really cool and it's been interesting because Birth Control is pretty new in terms of its style. It's different than anything I've ever done before. Like, I generally do more, like, I guess, classic filmmaking stuff. But, you know, people seem to either love it or hate it, and that's the type of film I'd want to make, frankly. I like, you know, I feel like a reaction in the middle isn't the best sometimes, you know, and so it's been just so nice to get these fans, and, like, hearing the audience laugh at different jokes or the same jokes is, it's cool for me also as a writer to be like, oh, good, I thought that was funny. I'm glad other people do too. You know?
Yeah.
Here we have a number of TV festivals coming in the next couple months. We have, among others, there's Norfolk in Long Island. There is one from, it used to be called IFP Week. It's under a new name. It's called Gotham Festival. There's still mm-hmm. possibly the Tribeca may do a TV festival. And you also have Catalyst, which will be in Des Moines, Iowa this year. Mm-hmm. Any plans to go to any of those festivals?
Let me see. I'm, like, looking right now. I have a whole sheet of all the festivals I submitted to. I did submit to Catalyst. They don't announce officially until August 20th, so I don't know if I'll be in that or not. And, I mean, there's literally, I think, 60-plus festivals that I have yet to hear back from, a lot of them in New York, Chicago, Atlanta, Minnesota, and Alabama, California, you know. And basically it's like I will go to any film festival that I can, you know, like within my work and all of that stuff, and I'll be there. And Lauren will be coming with me too. Lauren's come to a bunch of them, right, Lauren?
Yeah, I love the festival circuit. I think it's so much fun to meet so many talented filmmakers. And the thing that's so special about How to Hack Birth Control and going on this festival journey with this film is that it's so funny. But it's so funny while being so informative, which I think is so special when you're talking about a topic that might be uncomfortable or difficult to talk to and honestly isn't talked about in the home enough. And I think, like, going through the festival circuit with a project like that that makes people laugh in a situation that might otherwise make them a little bit nervous to talk about has been really interesting and fun, and it's such a great conversation starter when you're meeting so many people at the festivals.
In a moment, we will talk to our guests about what is the future of How to Hack, and we'll also find out from Lauren how it's impacted the possibility of getting other roles, too. And if you have a question or comment for our guests, Lauren Harris and Sassy Moen, in our mini-minutes with them this half hour, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Remember, next Monday on Tomorrow We Televise, among our guests, we will have Matt Fleckenstein. He is the developer of the new Apple TV Plus series, Best Foot Forward, based on a best-selling book about someone who managed to get an education despite the fact of having a prosthetic leg. And we'll talk to Matt about making the series, which premieres this Friday on Apple TV Plus on smart TV sets and smart devices. And then the following Monday, August 1st, first Monday of the month, our 15th anniversary episode of Tomorrow Be Televised, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern, noon to Pacific, special two-hour episode with a key TV executive in each hour. On the 3 p.m. hour, which is noon Pacific time, we will have the Executive Vice President and Head of Programming for Lifetime Television, Amy Winter, in a very rare interview of any kind. And then the following hour, number two, we'll have the General Manager of the fast-rising Mega Content Service topic, Ryan Chinatry. And coming up 2 weeks from today, August 1st, 3 to 5 Eastern, noon to Pacific, our special 15th anniversary edition. Be with us for it right here exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. So, Sassy, have you along the way been getting any feelers from, let's say, Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, Apple TV Plus, eight other people about maybe making How to Hack a Television series?
Yeah, so one thing that's been awesome is I actually got signed this past October because of the How to Hack series. And so my management team and I are developing the whole series right now and are going to be taking it. They already started putting out feelers to try and get pitch meetings for it. The other, so we'll be pitching it this fall and winter. And the other cool thing is I'm in the middle of talking to some speaking agents right now that will hopefully be solidified within the next week or two. And so then I'll get to be able to take it to colleges and speak afterwards and have Q&As with, you know, students, whoever wants to come and listen. And I feel that between those two outlets, that I'm pretty confident something cool is going to manifest from them, because even just the reception, it's getting, you know, like you put your blood, sweat, and tears into a film and you think it's great, but you have no idea if it actually is or not until other people watch it. And so I'm really excited for everything that happens next, even though it's kind of ambiguous at this point. At the rate of which this has all been going, I can only imagine by the end of the year that I could actually have a concrete answer to your question and a positive one at that.
Yeah. And Lauren, what inroads are you making in your acting career as a result of people seeing you in this series?
Yeah, I would say a lot, because it really was great in that, like I was saying earlier, it's informational, but it's also so funny. And I really specialize in projects that are funny, but also work to make a societal impact. And I'm also a filmmaker, so I'm actually heading to Columbia to get my MFA in producing in the fall, where I hope to continue working on projects that are both funny but also have some sort of purpose to make an impact on society. So, you know, I hope that Sassy and I continue to work on projects. I hope that I get more information on learning how to work on projects, and hope to continue making projects that are very similar to How to Hack Birth Control in what they're doing to make a difference.
By the way, if there's a TV series that sometime, you know, after we go off the air or like within 24 hours called you up and said, Lauren, have a guest shot on this, what would it be? What would you like to work on?
You know, I'm just going to tell you exactly what my gut answer is, and it's The Blacklist. I just can't get enough of that show with James Spader.
By the way, Martin Garrow, who is one of the key executive producers of The Blacklist, is now doing a new Netflix series, an adventure series called Keep Breathing, which is about a woman who survives a plane crash and has to try to get herself back to society. And that is premiering, I believe, next Friday on Netflix. And we're trying to get, by the way, Martin or one of the other executive producers to come on the program and talk about it. It sounds like a very interesting project for Netflix. By the way, Netflix, latest quarterly results, tomorrow afternoon, 4 p.m. Eastern. And 1 p.m. Pacific time. We'll see whether their stock goes up or not.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm curious to see how that plays out.
Yeah, right now the stock, as last time I saw it this morning, was around 195, near 200 bucks a share. We'll see how it goes, of course, as I said, almost 24 hours from now. And Sassy, apart from this, continuing How to Hack, is there another series idea that's sort of like your plan B that maybe you want to get off the ground?
Yeah, we're developing two other shows right now too. So, and they're actually both things I've already done. So I did a TV pilot in 2016 called Weedland, and it's basically about weed delivery, but exploring hypocrisy in the government and what it means to be a woman who runs a business. And it's set in 2015, so before, you know, everything that's happened now. And then also I'm developing another show based off a feature film I did 10 years ago called True Perfection. That's like a mockumentary sort of dark comedy type of feel to it about the impact of social media on the sense of self in people today generally. So those are two other issues I'm very passionate about, you know, women in business and women in roles, like presidential type of roles, and then also how social media has affected kids today because they seem to be going a little crazy, you know?
Again, the name of the miniseries is How to Hack Birth Control. It's a prize winner at many a film and TV festival over the last year, and chances are it might be coming to a film or TV festival near you in the months ahead. And if you don't want to wait, I'm happy to tell you that there is a website that you can check out the series on. It's called birthcontrolhacks.com. That's birthcontrolhacks, all one phrase, .com. If this does become a series, by the way, we will let you know. And I mentioned earlier the great Oscar-winning, award-winning shorts by Robert Benchley, Pete Smith, and also Joe McDoak series that was done by George O'Hanlon. Some of you know him as George Jetson, the original George Jetson on the Jetsons, and also a wonderful comedy actor. He created the series with his writing part of the time, the great director Richard Baer of Green Acres fame, and some great episodes of The Twilight Zone as well. So if you want to find out more and catch those particular short films, check out Turner Classic Movies, TCM.com, also Turner Classic Movies at HBOMax.com as well. Lauren Harris, Sassy Moen, thank you both very much for coming on today. Congratulations on your marvelous success with the series, and hopefully we can talk to you next time when this does become graduates into a regular television series somewhere.
Yes, thank you so much for having both of us.
It has been a pleasure all the way. Let's do it again soon. Lauren, Sassy, take care. Have a superb week ahead.
You too. Thank
you. You too.
Nice. Lauren Harris and Sassy Moen of How to Hack Birth Control joining us live from Los Angeles. Now time for our classic trivia question of the week, second week that we are offering it, and final, I might add. So get your thinking caps on. If you're first with the correct answer, you'll win not one but two great books. One is The Unexpected Danny Green by our recent guest, Paul Friedman, which may become a television series based on the success of the book so far. The new book, all about the world of TV and entertainment, Flirting with Fame, from our recent guest, the PR entertainment guru, Dan Harari. And Nickelodeon's The Loudmouth Christmas Card Set. You can get a jump on the holidays with it. And it's all yours if you know the answer to this question. On the 1960s TV series Batman, that's the live-action version, Adam West, Burt Ward, etc., what villain was played by George Sanders, Eli Wallach, and the celebrated controversial film director Otto Preminger? What villain was played by, at various times, George Sanders, Eli Wallach, and Otto Preminger? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget, when you give us your email, make sure you enclose your name and your mailing address. So if you win the prizes, we get them right to you as soon as possible. And if you're a previous winner, you are not eligible. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, we will post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. And again, the way you enter is simonapple04@yahoo.com. We only take email entries only. So one more time, here's the question. On the 1960s live-action Batman TV series, what villain was played by George Sanders, Eli Wallach, and Otto Preminger? SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's your ticket to three possible prizes. So get in to win today, okay? And all the very best. You're listening to Marvy Televised. We are the program all about TV's current and future. We've been on the air since August of 2007. And 2 weeks from today, we mark our 15th anniversary with a special two-hour edition. That's 3 to 5 Eastern, noon to 2 Pacific. Amy Winter from Lifetime Television, our guest for the first hour. Ryan Chinatry, the general manager of Topic, our guest for the second hour. And that will give you enough time, by the way, to talk to our guests by phone or chat room. Again, that is 2 weeks from today. When we come back, one of Lifetime's biggest hits, Flowers in the Attic, is back with its prequel miniseries, and it's doing great, The Origin, with people like Harry Hamlin, Kelsey Grammer, Kate Melgrew, Paul Wesley, and others in the cast. You'll meet executive producer Paul Sciarrota. He will join us live from L.A., and we'll also have a special comment about a breakthrough in Spanish-language sports television that happened this weekend. Can you guess what it was? We'll tell you. All that after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. You are listening to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com, together reaching nearly 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Jay King and his crew are ready to entertain you tomorrow with Kings in the Morning. Check them out tomorrow, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best to be TR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our final 30 minutes of Tomorrow Be Televised on this Monday afternoon of July 2022. And welcome those just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon, I'm with you live from New York. Got a great guest in store for you in the next 30 minutes. And we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. You just pick up the phone and you dial in with this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio. And if you're shy about the phone, that's no problem with us. Use our chat room. It's available right now. SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Well, over the last few weeks, regular Lifetime TV viewers have been delighted with a prequel miniseries to one of the network's most popular franchises ever, Flowers in the Attic. It's a four-part miniseries. Part two happened this weekend. Part three will be taking place this coming Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. And what a cast for this prequel. Emmy Award winner Kelsey Grammer, nominees Harry Hamlin, Kate Melgrew, Paul Wesley, a People's Choice Award nominee, a Critics' Choice nominee, Alana Bowden, and many, many more. And joining us live to talk about it is one of the key executive producers of Flowers in the Act, the original, Paul Skirota. Paul, it's great to have you here.
Thanks for having me. Much appreciated. Congrats on 15 years next week. Amazing.
Thank you very much. Thank you. We do appreciate it. And we are delighted that you are one of our guests that's making our 15th year so special. And this has got to be very special because Flowers in the Attic is one of the most prized Lifetime franchises based on a best-selling book series by B.C. Andrews. What had you get involved with the project?
So it was over 4 years ago. I was working on Jane the Virgin, and the creator of that show, this wonderful writer and producer, Jenny Ehrman, came to me because someone had come to her with the rights, and that's where it all started. And I was excited because I had read the book, you know, back when I was in middle school. And so when I first started pitching it to the folks at A&E and Lifetime, we thought we were going to do the traditional book Flowers in the Attic. And then I realized there was a prequel. So we changed gears, shifted everything, and I ended up doing the origin story instead, which for me was extremely exciting because I think it gave us a chance to break some new ground.
Mm-hmm. We often talk about on this program, what does it take to do a sequel or a reboot of a made-for-TV movie or a television series or a miniseries? On the flip side of the coin, what does it take to do a prequel?
Well, I've done both now. I've done the reboot, and now I'm doing a prequel. So, I think for the prequel, this one there was I had a very clear idea of what I wanted to accomplish. There's a lot of characters in the limited series, but really it all centered around one, which in the main books it's the grandmother, but her name is Olivia Winfield Foxworth, and she's this woman who fans of the VC world know locked her grandchildren in an attic for 3 years. And what I wanted to do was spend these 8 hours focusing on trying to explain how someone gets to that place in life where they would lock their loved ones, children, in an attic. So that was always what I went back to. Because I had a very sort of specific focused goal on what I wanted to do with it, whenever I found myself lost, I just went back to that through line and hopefully got back on track.
Mm-hmm. What about that character had you conclude this would be one to build a prequel around as opposed to other characters at different places?
Yeah, well, there is source material. So there's a prequel book called Garden of Shadows. So V.C. Andrews died in the 80s, and when she died, she wasn't finished with the Flowers in the Attic saga. So her ghostwriter started, Andrew Niederman. And the first book he wrote under her name is Garden of Shadows. And he's since written over 100 titles under the V.C. Andrews name. I think he's the most prolific ghostwriter in the history of ghostwriting. He's done incredible work. He puts out over 2 books a year. So I had source material. And I think why her character, for me, it was because people referred to her as the grandmother. Most people who read the main book don't even know her name. She was just this idea of evil. And I think behind that, there's got to be a reason why someone gets that way. And it was my job to take the beautiful work that Andrew had written in Garden of Shadows and try to uncover some more layers and explain away why this woman did what she did. And we got to do it over the course of 35 years. I come from most of my history is in network television. So as you know, like I was doing 22 to 25 episodes a year my whole career. And usually in that kind of TV, you pick up week by week exactly where you left off. If you get to jump, you know, a week or two in story time, that's a lot. Here I had this chance to tell the story of this woman over 35 years of her life in 8 hours. So it was exciting because we got to look at her, but in an almost a nonlinear way. We got to skip to all those biggest pivotal watershed moments in her life, in her family's life, that lead us to the famous flowers in the attic.
When you have 8 hours spread out over 4 weeks, 4 2-hour episodes, to accomplish what you want to accomplish with your creative team, how psychological do you go in terms of layers, as you mentioned before, with these characters, given, you know, the central character who locked up someone in the attic for 3 years? Obviously, that person alone has a huge psychological issue at hand. I'm just wondering how you balance the time and the script and everything in terms of figuring out how deeply do we want to go with these characters and make sure the audience stays involved.
Yeah, I never look at it in terms of, like, how deep do I want to go. I look at it in terms of, like, do I understand their motivation? And if I understand it, then I think we've gone deep enough. So that was the litmus that we used in this process. And, you know, for Olivia, because what she ends up doing, locking the kids in the attic, is so extreme, we had to spend a lot more time with her character going deeper because she does this thing that's a lot sort of more horrible than the rest of them. But then around her are a lot of other characters. And I think I hope we did a pretty good job of balancing out all of the real estate they take up in the show and fleshing out their stories and giving them motivations and passions and drives and loves and hates and flaws. Because I took a lot of characters from the books, but as fans of E.C. Andrews will know, there's a lot of characters in the limited series that are not in the books. Her world is pretty small in how she writes in terms of, like, number of characters. And I wanted to expand the world quite a bit, and both in number and in diversity. And I think we had a really great opportunity to do that in this 8 hours.
Mm-hmm. Flowers in the Attic, The Origin, is the new prequel miniseries to one of the network's most famous franchises, Flowers in the Attic. And part 3 is going to be coming away this Saturday night, 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time on Lifetime Television, available on cable and satellite. And joining us is Paul Sciarrata. He is one of the executive producers of this miniseries. It's popping up right now. And if you have a question or comment for him, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Happy to have you with us this half hour. Paul's joining us live from L.A. Simon Applebaum here with you on the other side of the nation in New York, where it's 76 degrees at the top of the hour. We are expecting a line of big showers and thunder showers within the next 2 or 3 hours to hit this New York metro area. So if you're in the area, get those umbrellas handy. If you need to get out and do some shopping quick, do it quick. And we will definitely get through this. And then after that, we got a heat wave, 90 degrees, as far as the eye can see, at least at the end of the week. We'll see if that does play out. You never, never know. Coming up Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we will have the 2022 Primetime Emmy Award nominee, Nena Erb. She's already won two of those trophies, one for Insecure with a few years ago with Issa Rae, the other for the HBO series Project Greenlight, and she's up for another Insecure episode this fall. Nena Erb from Insecure and other projects. A lot of people think she's one of the best film editors in episodic TV right now, and you'll hear from her Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Did you ever think, when you took this project on with your team, led by Jenny, that you would have the kind of actor quality you've got? I mean, to have someone like Kelsey Grammer and Harry Hamlin and Paul Wesley and Kate Melgrew and on and on and on, that's superstar power for television.
It is. And, you know, I, of course, hoped that we would find a brilliant cast, but casting is If the casting gods are shining down upon you, then you will have great fortune. And if not, you're pretty much screwed. And we were very, very lucky from the beginning. Kelsey signed on in the very beginning, which I think set the tone for everybody else. So I'm super grateful for him for having the faith in the project for that. And the biggest challenge, though, was obviously to find our Livia, because she's in almost every scene. The entire series rests on her shoulders, pretty much. And I was terrified we weren't going to find someone who could play all of it. And then Jemima Rooper showed up, and all my dreams came true. She's just brilliant. And then when we shot the whole thing in Romania over the pandemic, so I had not met her in person. We had done auditions over Zoom. And when we started shooting in Bucharest, I remember the first day my jaw was just open at how just perfect she was for the part. And as you guys know, like, when you're shooting, hours are long, it's intense. You know, in our case, we were in a different country. And when you have a lead like that, it's working pretty much in every scene, like, so much of the tone of what happens on set is set by that person. And we were so fortunate to have Jemima set our tone, because she shows up every day, smile on her face, ready to work, prepared, and she was doing it all with, like, her four-month-old baby on set. So I really just could not be more grateful for everything she brought to the project.
Paul, when you were working on Jane the Virgin, you worked with Gina Rodriguez, who, similar situation,
yeah.
She was almost like in every scene of all the years of that mm-hmm. program. And now she's a TV producer, creator on her own. Did you use any of the experience with Gina with Jemima?
I wouldn't say I used it, but I did think about it a lot, in that I was like, how fortunate I was to find someone who was filling that role like Gina did, because Gina was always so gracious on set, always so prepared and professional, elevated everyone's game. And I felt like just the way luck had it, I found someone who could do similar things in Jemima.
And there's also another person, too, who is coming off an interesting role in the series Condor, which I think is a very underrated. I've seen that series. Very, very
yes.
underrated. His name is Max Iron. Talk about his role as Malcolm Foxworth.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so we were trying to find our Malcolm. And, you know, Malcolm in this, he does a lot of horrible things. And I knew that if we couldn't find the right Malcolm, no matter what Olivia did, it wouldn't quite work. But beyond what was going to be seen on screen, he has to do some pretty horrible things. And I was also worried about being on set and, like, how would the other actors feel? So we had to find a brilliant actor. We also had to find someone who's a nice person who can make everyone feel comfortable doing these fairly atrocious things. And when Max came along, it was fantastic. And when he said yes to the role, I was even more excited. And I remember our first rehearsal, we were in some hotel in downtown Bucharest, and I was with him and Jemima, and we were going over some of the most complicated scenes. And he's just such a gentleman and so sweet and so kind-hearted. I promise everyone, what you see in Flowers in the Attic is the exact opposite of Max Iron. I'm smiling now just thinking of what a kind soul he is. And he was able to somehow infuse a lot of humanity and I think a lot of heart into the character of Malcolm, who could otherwise really be seen as just a straightforward, one-dimensional villain. And with Max's performance, I think we see a lot of layers, and I think we have a lot of, I won't say understanding, but maybe like compassion for how someone can become quite so villainous.
Now, in addition to being an executive producer, you were also one of, I believe, three writers of this miniseries, and you also had two directors. One did the first two parts, the first 4 hours, one did the other 4 hours. So how do you deal, both on writing and directing, with issues of continuity, making sure that, you know, everybody's on the same wavelength? Let's say if you wrote the first 2 hours and you're setting things up, that everybody, your other writers, I believe they're Amy Rarden and Connor Goodwin, the other two writers. I want to get the director's names out, which is, Declan O'Dwyer did the first two. He's also executive producer, did the first two segments, and then Ramin Shepherd did the other two.
Yeah, I approached it very much as a TV series would, even though they are in two-hour TV movie formats. I don't know how to run a series of movies and how to run a TV show. So Connor and Amy and myself, we had worked together for years on different projects. So we had a shorthand. And so we basically just, we worked together. We had a little mini writer's room. And this was the very beginning of the pandemic. We started in March of 2020. And we worked from 9 to 12 in the morning on a three-way phone call. This is before Zoom became popular, just for 3 weeks. And we broke all 8 hours. So we all knew what we were doing. They would send me their drafts of their outlines and scripts. I would give notes and stuff, and then I would do passes afterwards. But we had a fantastic creative collaboration. So in that sense, that worked exactly like a traditional writer's room would work. And as far as being on set, in a typical situation like this, I would normally not be on set for every single shot of a show. But it was a pandemic and things were different, and they were shooting in a different country, and it was my baby. I wanted to be there. So I was there for both blocks every day. So there was someone there to look for continuity, to make sure we were shooting one cohesive, solid piece that felt like it was all being seen through the same lens.
Mm-hmm. Hearing Paul Sciarrata, he is one of the executive producers of the new Lifetime miniseries, Flowers in the Act, The Origin. Two parts down, two more parts to go. The third part is this Saturday, 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on Lifetime, available on cable and satellite. Paul joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom Rabin with you live from New Web, New York. 76 degrees at this very, very moment. If you have a question or comment or remaining minutes with Paul, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And before we leave you, in case you didn't realize it, for Spanish-language television viewers, there was a very big sports breakthrough this weekend. We'll tell you what it was before we leave you at the end of this half hour, before the bottom of the hour. Paul, where did you film in Romania, and how do you turn wherever you filmed into the kind of atmosphere that you want for this miniseries?
Yeah, well, we wanted the Foxworth Hall, the big house where the whole thing takes place, is supposed to be in the deep woods of Virginia. And when I heard we were shooting in Romania, I was skeptical. Ended up being a huge blessing. We found this old mansion that is not the mansion you really see in the show, but it had some good bones. So we expanded the physical the house itself a little bit, but when you see it on TV, the exterior is about two-thirds visual effects and only one-third practical. Inside, we built three of the rooms, the grand hall, the dining room, and the library, and the rest are all locations. But that's just like the nuts and bolts. For me, like, it was more about like tone and how does it look and how does it feel and how to capture that Southern Gothic vibe. So it was a lot of dark, a lot of mist, a lot of candlelight, a lot of mood. And I always, through the whole process, from pitching it, writing the outlines, writing the scripts, to being on set, like, had the music in mind. I knew what it sounded like, and that really helped a lot to help me communicate to our department heads what it should look like. So I listened to a lot of Bernard Herrmann over the course of this. I wanted the music to reflect the gothic horror of like 1940s and 50s cinema.
Mm-hmm. Well, who did you have, by the way, composing your music?
This incredible team called FaZe. They're based in the UK, and they were extraordinary. They latched on to what I was trying to make it sound like so quickly, and they dealt with my musical passion but musical ignorance at the same time, because I'd be like, well, can this sound be more like a ding or more like a chime without knowing the right words? And I would name instruments that were definitely not the correct instruments, but they were able to sift through what I was saying and somehow create the score that we have, which I'm in love with. I was also given access to the whole A&E Music Library, and they have a massive classical music selection. So there are some really wonderful, like, Mozart Requiem pieces that I used, and Vivaldi, and even the humming chorus from Madame Butterfly. So there's a lot of, musically, I was really happy with the resources I had and how it all came together.
I understand that you got some assistance from the Romanian government. Who did you deal with, and how did they help you make the miniseries?
You know, the details of all of that really are were through the Romanian leg of the production company there. They were our production house who helped us with, say, actor visas and securing locations over there. So the specifics of that, to be honest, I'm not sure. I can tell you that we had a really, really incredible UPM named Alma Bacula, and she was my person that I went to for all questions Romania. And she guided me through the process and really helped shepherd the show through the process. So I owe a lot of thanks to her.
So in our remaining moments, what's next for both you and Jenny?
Well, Jenny has, I can't speak for her. She has so much going on, it's hard to keep track, but I'm sure all of it will be wonderful because she's brilliant. As for me, I am writing a few pilots. I'm supervising a couple others. I'm producing one, and I'm writing a movie, and that is what's on tap for now. And as you know, you have to have a bunch of projects because, you might have 8 or 10 things going, but out of those, maybe one or two will shake out and actually happen.
When it comes to the TV series pilots, is there a certain genre of television you want to go into you haven't done before? Because you've done the dramedy with Jane the Virgin, you've done this prequel with Flowers in the Attic. Is there a different direction you want to pursue?
I always end up going back. When I look at all the things I do, it all comes down to, like, how do you best get to, like, the human emotion in a family? What I'm doing right now, I'm looking at that through the lens of more of a genre piece and a supernatural genre piece, looking at a sort of a crime family, but they're trading in magical body parts. And that's my next take on family drama.
Mm. Wonder what Dan Curtis of Dark Shadows would say about that. one of the masters of supernatural television, both daytime and primetime.
Yeah, well, this one is through, it's based on a webtoon, so I can't claim credit for the idea.
There you go. Again, the series is Flowers in the Attic, The Origin, the prequel miniseries, and it's a big one with a great cast, including Kelsey Grammer, Harry Hamlin, Paul Wesley, Kate Mulgrew, and in two key roles as Olivia Winfield and Malcolm Foxworth, Jemiah Rooper, and Max Irons. And again, episode 3 of 4, this Saturday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on Lifetime Television. Check your local listings for when Lifetime is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program and the network online, there's www.mylifetime.com. There's www.mylifetime.com. Again, chapter 3 of 4 this coming Saturday. And remember, 2 weeks from today, on our 50th anniversary episode, in our first hour, an exclusive interview with Amy Winter, the Executive Vice President and Head of Programming at Lifetime. She rarely gives interviews of any kind, any medium. This is going to be very, very special. So tune us in 2 weeks from today. Amy Winter, Executive Vice President, Head of Programming at Lifetime Television on our 15th anniversary episode. Paul Sciarrota, thank you very much for being on this afternoon. Congratulations on having this prequel miniseries happen. And so far, so great. And we'd love to have you back. Many, many more great successes to you, Jenny, and everybody else in the TV world.
Thank you, Simon. Have a great day.
You too. All the greatest. Take care. Paul Sciarrota joining us live from Los Angeles. Well, in case you're wondering, there was a breakthrough this weekend in the world of Spanish language television sports. When I started covering Spanish language television as a medium, as a journalist, over 40 years ago, when it came to sports, the diet was very simple. It was a three-way diet. It was soccer. Not necessarily U.S. soccer, but soccer around the world, including the World Cup, boxing, and wrestling. And how times have changed over the succeeding decades. Now, most of the major sports events are available one way or another on Spanish language television. The World Series, the NBA Finals, the Summer Olympics, the Super Bowl, and all the NFL playoff games, regular season games, Sunday Night Football, and Monday Night Football on Telemundo and ESPN Deportes, respectively. And yet, there still are sports that have not yet had Spanish language television showcase. Earlier this year, in fact, a few months ago, we had two of the Triple Crown races on Telemundo, the Preakness and the Belmont Stakes, without a lot of advance word. Well, that happened again this past weekend when the 150th British Open from the Royal and Ancient Golf Club in St. Andrews, Scotland, an amazing tournament this weekend, was seen for the first time in Spanish language television, both Saturday and Sunday, live, Telemundo sister network, Universo. And believe it or not, I believe it is the first major golf tournament We're talking Masters, PGA, British Open, and the U.S. Open that was presented live on a Spanish-language television service. I really, really hope that what NBC and Universo did for the British Open, it won't be the last time that golf, especially that you have a lot of Latino golfers now, and not just golfers in the United States, but golfers around the world like John Rahm, that we will see Spanish-language television cover the major golf tournaments and maybe even give the PGA Tour and the LPGA Tour and the Corn Ferry Tour a chance to get a new audience and a great loyal audience through Spanish-language television. Again, 150th British Open. Congratulations to NBC and Telemundo Sports Network Universo for running the British Open live these last two mornings and early afternoons on that service. I want to thank all of our guests for being with us today in the last 90 minutes, and welcome all and thank all of you for tuning in. Remember, coming up on Friday, we will have 2022 Primetime Emmy Award nominee Nena Elb from Insecure on HBO. And the following Monday, among our guests, the developer of the new Apple TV Plus series premiering this Friday, Best Foot Forward, Matt Seckenstein. And 2 weeks from today, August 1st, 15th anniversary episode, very, very special, two-hour edition, live, 3 to 5 Eastern, noon to Pacific, first hour, Amy Winter, the Executive Vice President and Head of Programming at Lifetime Television, second hour, topic general manager Ryan Tenatri. If you came in late on today's episode, want to catch up an episode you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out our podcasts. They're available anytime you like at Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, including through Vizio Smart TV sets, Google Podcasts, podcast.google.com, Spotify, our radio podcast network, and many other places. And don't forget our website, available 24/7. Tomorrow will be televised.onpodium.com. Love to hear what you have to say about today's episode and what your thoughts for TV is at and where it is going. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget, you can find me on social media, Facebook and LinkedIn at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. However you communicate, we communicate back to you within 24 hours. Why? Because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed here are those of the participants. They are not say those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy Toe is BTR's general manager. Jay Soderberg is head of content. Website service provided by On Podium, the internet's new podcast outpost. Guitarist Vegas is our web coordinator. Lobby Televised was brought to you by Audible.com, the audio marketplace of Amazon.com. Remember, Audible transforms the way you hear the world. For a free audiobook or two and the opportunity to get your first 3 months if you subscribe absolutely free, check audibletrial.com/televised. It makes a great gift for you or someone you love. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a wonderful rest of your Monday and week. If you're dealing with the storms coming up in the New York metro area and other parts of the East Coast, hang in there. Get that umbrella out. Do what you need to do if you can so you can be warm and comfortable and cool in your home. And then join us again on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tuner Radio, all of our podcast affiliates, and Tomorrow Be Televised on podium.com. Whatever you do between now and then, make it safe and great as much as possible. If you haven't been vaccinated, check in with your doctor, check your medical situation, find out all the alternative treatments you have to vaccines and boosters, including the Pfizer and Merck pills, and then make a great choice, your choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.